live from Wildcat Golf Club for a Veritex Community Bank Roadshow. This is the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
Tech saying, was RG3 a runner?
Yeah, absolutely. He was. Was out of the league pretty much after his second season. Yeah, he had backup roles, things like that. I don't believe in spending huge draft capital, huge money on quarterbacks who rely majorly on their legs. And 8803 says every quarterback scrambles out of the pocket now. That's true to a degree. I recognize that. I understand that. But there's some who do it sometimes. There's some who rely on it. And the ones that rely on it are the ones that I'm not going to, you know, hitch my wagon to my franchise to. It's something that scares me. You look around the NFL, Lamar Jackson has missed the good part of two of his last seasons, has taken the Baltimore Ravens when he's playing as a championship contender, and all of a sudden he gets hurt. They're no longer a championship contender, yet he still wants to make more money than any other quarterback in the history of the league, can't make it through a full season. Mainly because he relies heavily on his legs. People point to Kyler Murray, oh, it was a fluke injury. Kyler Murray was running when he got hurt. Kyler Murray was running out of the pocket when he got hurt. To the texter's point about RG3. RG3's career was pretty much ruined for the injuries that he sustained. Michael Vick, how many times did that dude get hurt all of a sudden? A team that's in playoff contention, he has an ankle sprain. Maybe he's even playing through that ankle sprain, but he's a shell of who he was. He is no longer that same player. And I think you can go Daniel Jones the same way. Like Daniel Jones, I'm not paying him that much money because of how much he relies on his legs. And looking at some of the draft prospects, Anthony Richardson would fall into this category. A couple of other reasons. Consistency. I think it's different. We talk about this all the time, Blank. Like how much... What does it take to win a Super Bowl? It takes you to win at least, at minimum, three playoff games in a row against the best competition in the league. You have to win three straight times against the best competition in the league. Is Lamar Jackson capable of beating the best competition in the league three straight times? Is Daniel Jones capable of beating the competition three straight times, the best in the league? Heck, is Josh Allen capable? Well, he relies heavily on his legs. Is he capable of beating the best competition three straight games? I think the consistency of players who fit this mold as well is very, very difficult, and I question whether or not they can do that.
And it's fair to look at their track record. And to this point, it's unequivocally no, right? I mean, Lamar
was close.
Who?
Hurts this year.
Yeah, Hurts was close, yes, but I'm talking about Josh Allen, as good as the Bills were. They were the preseason favorite to win it all.
Yep.
When you look at Lamar himself, weren't they the one seed 1 year?
Lamar has been atrocious in
the
playoffs.
Yeah, that's what I was going
to say. Atrocious.
No matter how high a seed the Ravens have been, they have bowed out early every single time on Lamar's watch. And that's something that is telling for what as you go forward, and also probably really important in his camp as to why he wants to go to a win now, instant roster ready to go situation, as opposed to I'll take the money in Houston and we'll work it out later. Mm-hmm. I think it's a bigger factor than people are giving it are considering it right now.
1185 says Patrick Mahomes relies heavily on his legs. I disagree.
He's not a running quarterback.
I mean, he has the ability to shift in the pocket. He has the ability to take it if it's there. He'll run for 20 yards. But he's not one that relies heavily on his legs. How many times have the Kansas City Chiefs drawn up a quarterback power, a quarterback sweep,
never,
a design
no.
quarterback
he's
run?
That's not a goal line.
Lamar Jackson, they do. Jalen Hurts, they do. Josh Allen, they
absolutely
do. Daniel
they do.
Jones, they do. Zero for Pat Mahomes.
He's an elusive escapability quarterback that extends plays, but he's not a running quarterback, and there's a huge difference.
Yep.
When you think about we're talking about just all the plays off the edge. Think about when Hurts gets behind the line with a shove in the back from a running back doing that fourth and one play.
Yep.
Where that could be catastrophic sometimes when you think about what could happen in the middle and around that pile when they're trying to stop a short yardage play, and they run that all the time.
I don't want to call it running quarterback, though, because I think Jalen Hurts is capable of beating you with his arm. Now, not consistently. Lamar Jackson has shown you he's capable of doing it, but they rely heavily, and more than others, running the football. Do they border on running quarterback? Yeah, I think some people probably would call them that. Lamar Jackson has had some really good regular season numbers. He's won an MVP, although that was 3 years ago. That was 3 years ago. Let's keep that in mind. But Patrick Mahomes is not what I would call relies heavily on his legs. The consistency scares me. The injury risk scares me. Yes, everybody in the NFL gets hurt, but whenever you're running the football, relying heavily on your legs, you have more injury risk than any of the others. And then the third one, it doesn't age well. This is to your earlier point about Stevie Francis. I think it's a really good comparison. When you lose your bounce, if you're a basketball player that relies solely on your bounce is one of the first things that goes. Whenever you're in the NFL, what's one of the first thing that goes? Your athleticism relative to the rest of the league.
It's your bounce and your quicks.
Lamar Jackson's always going to be a great athlete.
Right.
But Lamar Jackson, relative to the NFL, right now he's one of the best athletes in the entire league. In 7 years, he might be a below-average athlete in the NFL.
And this is assuming he stays 100% healthy the rest of the way.
And that's a huge assumption.
And that's a big gamble.
And that's the point one, the injury risk.
But even the hops, it's also the quicks. The quicks, too. It doesn't, you know, you can have that springy in basketball. You can have the jumping ability. But it's also that first step, that explosion. Mm-hmm. And that's what Lamar relies on. When he decides to go and put the gas pedal down, he goes at a really high level. His zero to whatever is lightning quick. As you get older, it's not as quick. And defensive players can catch up with you quicker, and that could be a bigger factor as well. So, and the other thing to your point, when we were talking about like a Jalen Hurts also is a passing quarterback because he has weapons to pass too, right? Baltimore has been the team that has really, it's been a point of contention lately about how the inability besides Mark Andrews to put guys around him that Lamar trusts that he can get the ball to, that he can throw to.
Yeah.
So that's why it's hyper important. If you don't want him to run as much, you got to put weapons around him all over the field. Texans aren't in a situation to do that.
No. Yeah, I mean, that's kind of it's also like, is that something you want to do with Lamar? Like, is Lamar going to take advantage of those guys? Like, I do think Mark Andrews is an elite pass catcher. Mm-hmm. He's not a receiver. You know, he's a tight end. People always point to, well, they've given Lamar Jackson no help. They gave him one of the top two tight ends in all of the NFL. Could they have used better receivers? Yes. But they also traded Hollywood Brown for a first, which tells me that Baltimore doesn't believe that they need really good receivers with Lamar Jackson because of his style of play. Like, that's also the counterpoint to Lamar Jackson. Somebody's saying that the only person you're describing here is Mahomes. I don't even need a quarterback who scrambles, quite honestly. I think that's one of the most overrated things currently in the NFL. I want a quarterback who can beat you from the pocket. And if we're talking about, like, the long-term sustainability of a quarterback, the longevity of a playing style, Tom Brady played into his mid-40s. Yes, he had 1 year where he tore his ACL, didn't play. He's a football player. It's going to happen. Aaron Rodgers playing near his 40s. Drew Brees played for a very, very long time. How many quarterbacks with the playing style that relies heavily on their legs have come anywhere close to that? Anywhere close to that. Maybe one that's lasted to their mid-30s. Their mid-30s. We're not even talking 40s. Their mid-30s. Like, Pat Mahomes can play until he's 40 because he's got an elite arm. Same thing with Herbert. Same thing with Burrow. Can Lamar Jackson play until he's 40? Can Daniel Jones play until he's 40? Can Josh Allen play till he's 40? Absolutely not.
No, I think that you look at a durability factor and you look at it and say, you can go up and down the board. And the guys that have been able to maintain the longevity are the guys like a Brady that insists that the first and foremost, I've got to have someone protect me at all times. He hated to get – look at Peyton Manning. Peyton Manning lasted as long as he did because they were hypersensitive to his hypersensitivity to being hit, just like Brady, and they made sure the first line of defense was always to protect the hell out of him to make sure that if he didn't do something stupid like run, we weren't going to do something stupid like, you know, make a subpar offensive line allow you to get crushed. And when you look at these guys and how much they sustain on a game-by-game basis by taking unneeded hits and extra contact, doing what they do, you're absolutely right. That's a reason why we don't see any of these guys making it to their late 30s. And if they do, they're a shell of themselves in terms of their ability to get things done.
I don't trust them. I wouldn't use a first-rounder. I wouldn't spend big money on quarterbacks that rely heavily on their legs. Battery Chuck says Randall Cunningham. Randall Cunningham reinvented who he was, quite honestly. He retired at the age of 32. Left Philadelphia, left the days of running the football a lot, retired for a year, and then came back and was a permanent starter for one season with Minnesota. Like, he was a completely different player whenever he came back. So I don't think Randall Cunningham's a great
example.
I think
Vic was like 32 as well before those last couple years in Pittsburgh and with the Jets. McNabb, I think, is very similar to that. He played 13 seasons. And it's not always just about running, but it's just the long-term, the wear and tear.
Yeah.
Like, it's just like the extra hits. Like, you don't want it. And the thing is interesting. I would be curious for Texans fans that are pro-Lamar, how many of them are also, if they're anti-Bryce Young, because they're worried about injuries, when in reality the concerns are virtually the same. One because of his size, and one because of how much he runs.
Yeah, see, I don't think Bryce runs nearly as much, though.
No, he does. I'm just saying, like, his stature.
But, like, when Jeremy says, you know, injuries are going to happen, and they are, right?
Sure.
But even if they don't happen, even if you get a guy that stays relatively clean bill of health throughout his career, if he's a running quarterback, the fact that even though you don't have a quote-unquote major injury, the wear and tear on your wheels is going to have a massive effect on your effectiveness. You're not going to be as quick. You're not going to be as elusive. You're not going to be able to. You're not going to be able to, as fast. The things that you have been able to do early in your career, you're not going to do nearly as well, even if you never have a major injury.
The tires rep for comp, I think, was a good one. I like that analogy because those guys have the and you could be really good for that period of time. Like, I'm not saying these guys are bad at all. I'm just saying there's fear there.
The window isn't open as long in terms of your ability to peak.
You can have some great years now that can, like, the consistency, can you do that three games in a row in the playoffs? I would challenge to say that you can't. I think that's why we haven't seen a quarterback that relies heavily on their legs ever win a Super Bowl. Like, has there been a quarterback that has ever relied heavily on their legs win a Super Bowl?
I think you've had a bunch of guys gone.
Steve Young did.
Steve Young, sure, but yeah. Steve Young had Jerry Rice and was a great thrower. Like, Steve Young was not a running quarterback.
But no,
Steve
but there
Young
are guys
did not
that
rely
would,
heavily
there
on his legs. He was capable of doing it, but he did not rely heavily on his legs.
He's another one of those
arm.
Guys that ran when he had to, extended plays.
He was really
was
good
elusive.
When he needed to.
But
what happened to Steve Young?
Where he'd rush
what happened
for 400
to Steve
yards?
Young? He also had to retire early because he got concussed over and over again. Steve Young actually proves the point. Now, he did win a Super Bowl, but was he relying heavily on his legs in the process?
Steve Young played until he was 38.
Steve Young had to retire early because of concussions.
He played till he was 38, Jeremy.
Did he retire early because of concussions?
38 is not early.
Did he retire early because of concussions?
38 is not early. I'm answering your question.
Steve Young retired early because of concussions, just like Troy Aikman retired early because of concussions. He was forced into retirement because of concussions.
So Steve Young was like 38 that. Troy and playing was 15 like, seasons
he played three
is early?
Games when he was 38. Like, that's kind of like, you know, you're mentioning 38 years old like there was this huge year that he put together. He played three games. Why? Because he got hurt. He got hurt because of a concussion.
Yeah, and older guys don't bounce Seinfeld back as quickly right from injury. I mean, he played 15 seasons.
He played 15 seasons that threw the ball all over the place. Wasn't a quarterback who relied on his legs. Was he capable of running the ball? Yes, he was capable of running the ball. Is that a ton for a quarterback? Is that a ton for a quarterback who played till he was 38?
From that era, it is.
He played how many years? 15 years? 4,000 yards? What is that a game? 20? 30 yards?
I'd have to average it out. I don't know. I'm just saying from that era, quarterbacks didn't run a lot. For the time, it was a lot.
Yeah, for the error, for the time.
I think there's a couple guys who I would say, like, I know they didn't win the Super Bowl, and I feel like that's almost like an unfair line that you are kind of putting on this, Jeremy. I think it should be get to the Super Bowl, because, like, there is just so few quarterbacks have ever won one. But, like, you've seen Colin Kaepernick get to a Super Bowl. You've seen Steve McNair get to a Super Bowl.
Steve McNair was a different player when he got there, though.
Yeah, it's true. He was. He was not the guy he was early on. Obviously, Elway was not the guy. He wasn't the runner that he was at the end of his career. It's just I think you can be a running quarterback and have success, but there's just less of them.
Yeah, there's far less of them.
Yeah,
there's far less of them. Like, you don't see it. Like, Jalen Hurts got close this year. Jalen Hurts was a game away this year. Lamar Jackson's never been close to a Super Bowl. Has been terrible in the playoffs. Colin Kaepernick, you used as an example, who got. You know, was a game away from winning a Super Bowl. Who were some other ones in recent memory? Josh Allen has not been to a Super Bowl. I think he relies pretty heavily
Cam
on
Newton.
His legs. Cam Newton got to a Super Bowl, put together one season. Yeah. And then, you know, other than that, was like, you know, pretty good quarterback, not a great quarterback. 713-780-ESPN, 713-780-3776, our HRNP listener line. We're making mock drafts great again. Todd McShay has a wild mock draft that brings up an interesting question for the Houston Texans. It's the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
This is a Veritex Community Bank Roadshow, live from Wildcat Golf Club. This is the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
Rain Man says that I hate Steve Young. I love Steve Young. Steve Young is one of
left-handed,
my favorite quarterbacks growing up.
Except
I think Steve Young
for the Niners, so I hate him.
I think Steve Young was one of my favorite quarterbacks growing up.
Are you sure? Because isn't he like everything you hate about quarterbacks?
Me? No, he didn't rely heavily on his legs.
He can. Small? He can run small.
He
lefty.
Can run, but he doesn't
don't
rely
have
heavily
a,
on his legs.
Don't you have a lefty bias too?
No, I love lefties.
Yeah, he hates
I love
me. I'm left-handed.
I love lefties. I love Steve Young. I love Mike Vick. Now he kind of fits the script of what I'm talking about here. I love Tim Tebow. He might even fit the script a little bit of what I'm talking about here too.
He's never going to be labeled as a passer or a pocket passer.
Steve Young led the league four times in passing touchdowns. He did not rely heavily on his legs. Battery Chuck
He relied on that guy number 80. He was pretty good.
He did a lot. Battery Chuck mentioned John Elway was somebody who was a really good athlete. Again, did not rely on his legs. Like, I'm not saying these guys are not capable of running the ball. I'm not saying that these
with
guys
his,
are
And he had
athletes.
Bad knees. He had Elway. Really bad legs. So he was a guy that maybe if he was healthy all the time, they might have eventually called some running plays for him in his prime. But he was. They were so worried about the fragility of his knees that there was no way that they were gonna call running plays and put him in harm's way.
No, but when you think of those guys, when you think of Young, when you think of Elway, yeah, really good athletes, great athletes. Were they relying heavily on their arm or their legs?
I mean, Elway had a cannon.
Yeah, they had unbelievable passing yards, like passing numbers. They relied heavily on their arm more than they relied on their legs. I wouldn't say the same thing about Lamar Jackson. I wouldn't say the same thing about Vince Young. Wouldn't say the same thing about Daniel Jones. Maybe Josh Allen. Josh Allen's kind of on the brink. Like, Josh Allen, I think, is right on the cusp of, like, I don't really know exactly how to label Josh Allen. He's right there on that, you know, right there on the cusp. All right, Todd McShay put together a mock draft, and we're making the mock drafts great again with the Killer Bees all the way until April 27th. McShay's first post-combine mock draft. He has the Bears, Joe George, trading down twice. They trade down to number 4 with the Colts, and then they trade down to number 7. Now, he doesn't do a great job of illustrating what this trade package would look like, but he said, I guess the package would include something like number 4, a second rounder, a fifth rounder, and maybe a first rounder in 2024. That's an interesting maybe. It may need an additional first round pick to sweeten it up. So he has the Bears trading down twice, first to the Colts. So the Colts are on the clock
at 1.
At number 1. The Indianapolis Colts are the number 1 spot of the NFL draft coming up on April 27th. They select Bryce Young. I think that Bryce Young's going to be off the board at number 1.
I do too.
I think Bryce Young's going to be the first overall player taken.
I don't know that I'm heartbroken by that. The more that I look at it, as much as I've wanted Bryce Young, the size, and I hear Lance talk about this more and more every day, the size is such a concern across the league that, you know, essentially at the start of the year, C.J. Stroud was the guy that was for the most part, a consensus first pick in the draft. If the Texans, and I think that a lot of this goes into Caserio's thinking again, that I think that he likes the bailout factor, that I believe he has concerns about his size, and I believe that he also knows the pressure with his job and with what he likes versus what the franchise might want in a guy with a name like Bryce Young coming from Alabama with all the things that he brings to the table. But I think that he likes the fact that a team could trade up to 1. He could say, look, we just weren't willing to give up the capital that they were looking for to get to that pick, and then just take C.J. Stroud at number 2.
That's what Todd McShay has the Texans doing. He has them just sticking and picking at number 2 and selecting C.J. Stroud after Bryce Young goes number 1 to the Colts. So Stroud's is the number 2 pick to the Texans. I don't love Stroud. I rather go a different spot if you're going here at quarterback.
I think there's another
guy
you love.
Yeah, but I'm Will Anderson. Like, I want Will Anderson at 2. Like, people don't understand that. That's why I want at number 2. I want Will Anderson at 2 and then trade back into the quarterback run with number 12 and sweeteners, probably the Cleveland 2024 first-round pick. Arizona takes Will Anderson. He goes number 3. Vegas trades up to number 4 where the Bears trade down again. They select Anthony Richardson. So Anthony Richardson is the third quarterback off the board. Tyree Wilson goes number 5 to Seattle. Then you have eventually Will Levis going off the board, number 9 to Carolina. Where Bijan Robinson goes number 10 to Philly, which is kind of an interesting spot where Bijan Robinson may go. I think that's the earliest.
That's the earliest he goes, but that's a luxury pick because they don't have a lot of needs, and I think that it would make a lot of sense.
The intrigue of the Todd McShay draft is what the Houston Texans do at number 12. On the clock at number 12, they already have C.J. Stroud. They select, out of Georgia, defensive tackle, Jalen Carter. McShay has the Texans taking Carter. If the Texans trade Jalen Carter, draft Jalen Carter at number 12 on April 27th, how will that make you feel?
As a Texans fan, I think that the majority of the fan base feels like you just got the coup of the draft. I think that most Texans fans are willing to look past his heavy driver's pedal and say, he makes our football team better. He was supposed to be potentially the number 1 pick in this whole draft. If we get a quarterback and we get one of the 2 best defensive players in this draft, I think Texans fans will be ecstatic.
I would hate it. I don't want to be in the Jalen Carter business. I'm of the belief if you don't want problems, you don't draft problems. If the Grizzlies could do it all over again, and the Grizzlies, I think the Grizzlies got the best player in that draft. Ja Morant's a better basketball player than anybody else in that draft, including Zion Williamson, who went number one in that draft. I think Ja Morant's the best player in that draft. If the Grizzlies could do it all over again, do they take Ja Morant at number two?
They do.
You think so?
They do. It's the Memphis Grizzlies.
I don't think
they do. Because they're a small market team, and they need someone that's going to stick and stay. And I think that, like, to your point, Zion Williamson, look, he's a double-double waiting to happen. Zion Williamson is a beast, but he can't stay healthy. And we knew coming out that they were concerns about that much weight doing that kind of jumping and athleticism on a consistent basis could be a recipe for disaster. But I think from a Memphis perspective, they were looking for the underdog kid, the kid coming in small from a small school. You know, people have a lot of question marks, but if he fits in there and they support him, that they could have him for the long haul, as opposed to Zion, who, quite frankly, before he signed with New Orleans, was hinting around and looking at the Knicks and other big city options because of the other marketing deals he thought would come with it. I think that Memphis, if they do it all over again, feel like he's is fixable. Because if you look at his background, and we talked about this the other day, if you look at his background from where he went to school and his family and basically silver spoon-fed because of his abilities since like 7th, 8th grade, there was nothing that said we should be leery of Ja Morant, and I think they'd take him again.
But I'm talking about...
You're saying
about
in retrospect, if they knew what they knew now?
If the Grizzlies knew about Ja Morant from the moment they drafted him to right now on March 8th, when they selected him at number two, because I don't blame the Grizzlies for drafting him either. Like, I believe that the Grizzlies thought that all this stuff wasn't going to happen. But if the Grizzlies could have a crystal ball, they knew what was going on. Or if you asked the Grizzlies right now after a few, you know, pops, a few Geno Bins and True Serum, all that sort of thing, off the record, would they still draft Ja Morant knowing what they know now? I personally don't think they would draft Ja Morant.
I do. I think they think that this will pass, that he is fixable, that they can get him with the right people. And, you know, even if they have to get someone that teams, it's not out of the realm that teams have done this in the past. They have like a built-in guidance counselor that goes everywhere with them. Like, they can call him team security or whatever, but he's basically the guy that keeps them out of trouble. And if there's trouble, he takes the rap for it. But I think that they would still do it again, and they feel like he's fixable.
I think it's just, you got to factor in just like what's next. Who's the next guy? And like with this conversation with Ja, is if you think you can correct him or it's not a serious problem long term, is the concerns with Ja Morant more valuable than R.J. Barrett? Because that's who's selected next.
I was going to say, the rest of that draft too, Jeremy, he looks like from a talent perspective, he was the guy.
I mean, I said he's the best player in that draft. Yeah, I understand the talent. Like, I'm not at all saying that. But I'd rather have R.J. Barrett and have zero issues off the court. Because they're talking about Ja Morant might get suspended for 50 games. Like, the NBA is talking about suspending him for 50 games.
That's a lot. I didn't know that. I didn't hear that part of it. But look, from the standpoint of trying to put Memphis on the map.
I get that.
Because, you know, it's like Giannis in Milwaukee, right?
Yeah.
The fact that they ended up hitting a home run with a Giannis, even if Giannis had some of the off-the-floor issues, there's no one like Giannis that could have transcended Milwaukee into the forefront of the NBA and said, this is a destination city. This is a franchise that's going to win and win consistently. Ja's got, you know, with the marketability, with the dunks he's had and some of the things, the signature, you know, moments he's had where people were like, wow, losing their mind. That's what Memphis needed as a franchise.
Sure. But then if they knew what was coming and they knew that he's potentially going to be suspended for 50 games, he's been, you know, all of the off-the-court stuff that has happened. This is the latest, like the IG story with the gun at 5 a.m. on a road trip after Steven Adams said, hey, we need to act like pros and you need to stop being out. The bullying of the dude at the mall cop,
yeah.
The Indian Pacers cars, all of this. I think, and look, I think it's probably torn. It's probably 50-50, the way it sounds like it is. I think Memphis would, if they had to do it all over again, and they knew what was coming, I think they stay away from Ja Morant. Now they're pod committed now. They have no choice but to try to commit.
The only reason why I'm all in, I would love Jalen Carter at 12, is because I'm going to trust the people that are here, that are hired. Go back to the very beginning. The press conference for D'Amico Ryans, he gets asked about J.J. Watt and what he means, and he goes on this long diatribe about having good people and people that want to play hard and work hard and like the kind of players, like how a team full of J.J. Watts is what he said. If D'Amico Ryans believes that whatever happened with Jalen Carter is either fixable or simple, young, stupid mistakes, I'm going to trust D'Amico in this situation that he can – that if he believes in Jalen Carter, I believe in Jalen Carter.
It's a
and
great
that's
point.
Why I think I'm in if this is it. Honestly, You want to know how I feel? Warm, fuzzy, tingly. I feel great. C.J. Stroud, Jalen Carter.
Yeah, see, that's what I'm saying. That's what most fans are going to think, too. But I think the great point is the DeMeco factor, which I don't think we thought about enough. DeMeco's the kind of guy that's even talked about from his press conference. He loves the late rounds to get those guys that have that motor. I think he also loves the fact that when he has talent, he can work with it, and he can guide them, and he can, you know, really kind of mold them. And I think that he could look at a Carter situation and go, I can fix that kid.
He definitely has a motor. Jalen Carter does. I have some pushback. I have a counterpoint to the DeMeco factor. I also have the thought of minimizing the Jalen Carter situation, something that I find interesting. But I'll ask you, Hive. Ask you, Houston. Jalen Carter on the board at 12. You okay with the Texans selecting Jalen Carter? 713-780-3776. Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
This is a Veritex Community Bank Roadshow, live from Wildcat Golf Club. This is the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
Killer Bees, ESPN 97.5, ESPN 92.5. How would you feel if Jalen Carter is the pick at 12? I would hate it. He's completely off my board. BQ says, I'm okay with Carter at 12 as long as we get an offensive weapon with the 30.
Second,
I'll just correct
pick.
BQ, with the 34th pick of the NFL draft. 5798, Jalen Carter at 12 is an absolute steal. Texans could trade up from 12 to get him, and I would still be happy about it. Y'all brought up the DeMeco Ryans thing. Like, I just want to be clear. I would not draft Jalen Carter with my 7th-round draft pick. I don't want Jalen Carter. I want nothing to do with Jalen Carter. The DeMeco factor, what you guys were pointing to, which, look, that is supposed to be DeMeco's strength, you know, brings the most out of players. The character that he has is supposed to elevate the character of some of the players in the locker room, all of that stuff. I agree. I think DeMeco Ryans does have those attributes as a head coach. They've also talked a lot, DeMeco and Nick Caserio, about drafting character, about how important it is to draft character, to bring players into the building that have character. A lot of the things that we, you know, quite frankly, heard about Easterby, wants character guys, doesn't want trouble, DeMeco Ryans is still saying. If we're going to be completely honest, DeMeco Ryans is saying the same stuff. You just hope their way of going about it's a little bit different than what we saw. I think that the DeMeco factor is actually a case against Jalen Carter not being a Texan. I don't think that DeMeco Ryans, when he could have another really good football player at number 12, is going to take Jalen Carter, even though he's probably going to be the best football player on the board at number 12 because of character.
See, this is tough for me because I think that the conundrum is, from a Texans perspective, I get that that's always been since Robert McNair owned the team. Like, you're going to pass on really good football players if there's any character issues of the past. But I think that when you see the talent that he brings to the table, and when you look at what Carter is facing in terms of, look, and I don't want to soft sell this at all, because it is an issue that has to be dealt with head on and it has to be rectified. But I think that it's something that, from a football perspective, if you truly believe that your guy, your head coach, your leader of men in that locker room is a true leader and a difference maker and a guy that can mold and guide young talent, then you believe he can. You leave it to DeMeco, basically. You say, if you think you can fix him, if you think this is a kid that you think you too much talent to pass up, and what he has been dealing with and with off the field issues, you can correct.
Is it possible to know that?
You never do, right? Because, you know,
but is it possible for DeMeco to know, like, to get enough intel on Jalen Carter to have a good understanding to be in a position to answer that question?
I don't think you could ever say it's unequivocally possible to know everything.
Like, because there's not going to be a lot of time that those two can spend together.
But
yeah, they can bring them in a meeting, all of that, but there's not going to be a lot of time for those two to really form a relationship.
Right, that's what I'm saying. That's why you can't do 100%. But DeMeco Ryan's been in the game for a long time.
Sure.
He knows a lot of people. So I think, yeah, you don't have that much one-on-one time with him personally, but you have enough people that know people that have been around him for extended periods of time where you got to do a ton of extra due diligence. You have got to do your homework. You've got to talk to a ton of people that are going to give you not the PRBS.
Uh-huh.
You need the true nuts and bolts of, this is who he is, this is who he's always been, this is what he's done, and then you're still putting yourself – you're going out on a limb. There's no doubt about it. You are taking a risk, because there have been a ton of guys that come out of college that teams think are fixable, and they're not. and then it backfires. But if you get a guy at that level of talent at 12,
there's still going to be good players on the board at 12. Like, that's one part of the equation that you have to talk about. Are they going to be as good as Jalen Carter? No. Quite frankly, they're not going to be as good as Jalen Carter. But it's not like who you're picking at 12's chopped liver either.
But if you look at, you know, in the past, if it comes back to bite you, right? Like, you take Jabbar Gaffney instead of a Clinton Portis. People are going to look at that and go, oh, my God, you missed so badly because you were so hung up on something in the guy's past that you refused to look at, from a football perspective, what he could have meant to your franchise, and then factor in, hey, we could work with him on these kind of things, and we think it's fixable. I just think that's too big of a – I think it's too big of a pass if you pass on him. I don't think he's going to be there at 12. I really don't.
I personally don't either.
But if he's there at 12, I don't know how you pass on him.
I mean, I'm sure there's other examples too. Like, I was thinking of Greg Hardy, but Greg Hardy was a late-round draft pick where somebody was like, okay, we're going to ignore the character issues, still draft him 15, and then all of a sudden the character issues continue, and you miss out on another really good football player.
I'm thinking about across sports, too, because I'm thinking about –
I mean, we used the Eddie Griffin conversation
yesterday. But Harold Miner was a guy that came out as baby Jordan.
Yeah.
And there was issues with Harold Miner both on the floor and off the floor.
Really?
Isaiah Ryder. J.R. Ryder was another one. Unbelievable basketball ability and talent. But he couldn't get right. He couldn't get out of his own way. In Portland, he couldn't stop, you know, breaking the law and going out with drugs and clubs and doing all the things that he did. And then Minnesota, Portland, everywhere he went, trouble followed him to the point where he was pushed out of the league.
One other kind of side point about the whole Jalen Carter thing is it kind of makes me sick how much we're minimizing what Jalen Carter did. Like, say he's just a guy who likes to race and has a lead foot and keeps his foot on the gas and goes very, very fast. Jalen Carter, at minimum, knew his friends got in a wreck. Knew they were at minimum, seriously injured, and left. And at minimum, he knew that people in the car that he was racing with got into a wreck. At minimum, they were seriously injured, and at minimum, he fled the scene. I don't want anything to do with Jalen Carter.
I understand what you're saying, and I don't have, because that's why I said I don't want to minimize what happened in one of those heavy-footed situations. But I also can tell you that in just looking at it to the scenario you laid out, I don't agree with what he did, but I can understand as a young, immature kid that is looking at being one of the top picks in the NFL draft and the fear of your entire career, the money, everything that was coming with it that could have been all in the palm of your hand could have just slipped away in an instant that you panic because you're not a mature adult making that decision and you understand the ramifications of what whatever happened could be to you and you just freak out.
He made a business decision.
He did end up coming back, but he came back way after, right?
He came back probably, I mean, it was an hour and a half later. Yeah. I don't want to make any sort of, like, allegations either, but, like, we knew what was going on with the people that did die because they had a toxicology report. I think some people could jump to that conclusion as well. I'm not going to do that.
Didn't they say they tested him and he...
I don't remember reading that. It may be so, but I don't remember reading that.
The police said after talking to him, they didn't think alcohol was involved. I don't know if they tested him or not.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, but at minimum, we know that he was racing at a high speed more than one time. He's been doing this previous times. We know at minimum that Kirby Smart had a sit-down meeting with him and his parents to, like, play harder or whatever, make meetings, whatever the case may be. And then Todd McShay said he had character issues. And then on top of that, at minimum, he was racing. His friends were involved in a crash that led to the death of two of his friends. And he knew at minimum that there was at least serious injury in that car and immediately left the scene. I can't trust Jalen Carter. I'm not touching Jalen Carter.
I'm not saying right or wrong, but we see it in Houston all the time when you watch the news in these street racing situations. The car that doesn't crash more times than not keeps on. They don't want the chance that they could be roped in and face, and they just flee.
Do you want to make a multi-million-dollar decision with that guy that fleed?
I understand that you have concerns about that, but I also understand that teams think that's fixable.
Let's do the practice we've been doing. We know that C.J. Stroud is a Houston Texan at number 2. So you're on the clock at number 12. We're using who McShay used at number 12 and then the next three picks after that. He has the Texans picking Jalen Carter, of course. The Jets pick Broderick Jones, tackle from Georgia. Patriots at 14, Quentin Johnston, the wide receiver from TCU. And the Packers at 15, Michael Mayer, the tight end from Notre Dame. Which of these four are you going with if you know that you have C.J. Stroud at number 2?
Man, this I know where I've been consistent, and I've got a receiver and a tight end. If Jalen Carter's available at 12, I'm taking Jalen Carter.
You're going Jalen Carter too, Joe George?
Yeah.
I just feel like
100%.
I just feel like that's the ability and the potential too much to pass up for a roster that has nothing.
If I'm on the board and I know I have C.J. Stroud and I have the option of Carter, Jones, Johnson, and Michael Mayer, I'm selecting Jalen. I'm just kidding. I'm going Michael Mayer tight end at Notre Dame. I feel a receiver at 12 is a reach. I feel a tight end at number 12 is a reach. I don't want to go either one at number 12, but I don't need a tackle. And I already told you I'm not touching Jalen Carter. I'm taking Michael Mayer over Jalen Carter. Can't believe I'm saying it, but I'm taking Michael Mayer over Jalen Carter. 713-780-ESPN, the HRMP listener line, 713-780-3776. All right, the Astros, opening day. It's just 17 shows away. We've been asking you a question every day heading into Astros opening day. Today's Astros opening day countdown question: what are the realistic expectations for Jose Urquidy, Luis Garcia? What does their ERA look like? What does their win total look like? It's the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
You're listening to a Veritex Community Bank Roadshow, live from Wildcat Golf Club. This is the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
Lamont just tweeted us, I didn't hear this part, but he said, I heard Cody Castuccio say that Deshaun Watson did something worse than Carter. I couldn't understand that. Dude participated in an event that led to death. AC, you say something like that? He said, nodding his head, yes. I hate, like, the other day we got into the argument about Brandon Miller and Jalen Carter. Like, they both did really terrible things.
It was a passionate discussion.
It was an argument. Let's call it what it is. That said, like, I hated having the conversation, not because of, like, what side I believe in, but it's like both people did something really bad. Like, both people did something really wrong. And I hate getting into the conversation. What's worse? Like, which of the wrongs were worse? I don't want to really get into the which was worse, Deshaun Watson or the Jalen Carter thing. Legally, Jalen Carter's was worse. Deshaun Watson did not get charged with anything criminally. Everything was, you know, he's going to go to civil court, all of that stuff, although he got dismissed, got no billed in two different counties. Whereas Jalen Carter got booked. Like, Jalen Carter had two misdemeanors, turned himself in. It was in there for like 12 minutes, less than one of our segments, and then was back in Indy, you know, the very next day. Legally, Jalen Carter did have more put on him than what Deshaun Watson did. Morally, as we had the conversation, like, what is morally wrong? They both did something that was morally wrong, allegedly. Carter seems that we have more facts. Deshaun seems like we have more hearsay, but they both did something terribly wrong.
Well, no doubt. And we still don't know, and we have to be careful in saying that Jalen Carter hasn't been convicted of anything yet either. And he may face civil stuff too. But, yeah, it's tough to face a conversation of apples to apples and say which one is worse when both were life-changing events for families and other people.
Yeah.
And so that's why I'm always – I know it's a hypersensitive topic, and that's why I'm always trying to be as sensitive as possible, going, look, I'm not trying to minimize
– no, you're not –
the damage that was done and the people that were affected. But I think that from – in thinking with a general manager and ownership hat on for considering guys, there's a reason why the Haslam family did what they did and completely blew the market out of the water to commit long-term with massive amounts of money to Deshaun Watson. Just like I think there are going to be teams, that's why I don't think McShay's draft is right. I don't think that Carter's going to slide to 12. I don't think he's going to slide out of the top 10. I don't know how much this is going to hurt him. Yeah, it could hurt him a slot or two, but I don't think this is going to hurt him like he even did with Tunsil with the mask on, with what happened with him in his draft.
Tunsil's was weird because it happened day of. Like, there was no time
was
to really
evaluate the situation. It was just kind of like when it came out. Almost like, was it calculated?
I mean, it came out. Yeah, it was. It was his stepdad, right? It came out as
his stepdad
draft.
Did it?
I think it was his stepdad.
I thought the Dolphins always did.
I think it was like
team involved.
I think it was like he wanted money from his kid from Tunsil and he wasn't going to give it. I mean, like, every situation is different. That's why it's hard to really know, because think about, like, Lael Collins.
Yep.
All we know about Lael Collins is he's being interviewed by the police in connection to a murder of an ex-girlfriend. In reality,
right,
he had nothing to do with it, but he obviously went completely undrafted. I know.
Yeah, you got her attention.
Sorry. but, like, obviously, like, he didn't do anything, but, like, no one knew at the time. So, yeah. It's like, there's so much time between now and the draft that, like, it just doesn't, I don't think he lasts that far. I don't think he makes out of top five still.
Yeah, I ultimately don't think he's going to be – I think he'll still be a top 10 pick, to Joel's point. I think Joel's right. Our Astros opening day countdown question of the day. Let's try to put together what the kind of seasons Jose Urquidy and Luis Garcia are going to have. Just 17 shows until Astros opening day. Let's start with my guy, Luis Garcia, who can no longer do his dance. So he's going to have to be a little bit more compact, a little bit quicker to the plate. One distinct start to the windup. Last year he was 13-8 with a 3.94 ERA. You want to start with wins or ERA first? Let's go with wins because it's first category that you look at whenever you read stats. What is Luis Garcia? Actually, he was 15. I read the wrong guy. Luis Garcia was 15-8 with a 3.72 ERA last year. Urquidy was the one I read. What does Luis Garcia do this year?
I was thinking
total?
Between 13 and 15. I think that one of the things that's going to factor into me is they're always hypersensitive about his workload and how many innings he pitches, and I think that they're going to try and nurse that all season long, whether it be with the six-man rotation or the amount of innings he actually pitches per start. And so I think that will affect his win-loss total. So I'm going to say he takes a slight step back, and I'll meet it in the middle. I'll say he wins 14 games.
See, I think he's going to take a step forward in terms of the overall wins because the offense is better and because he's a year further along in his career. And I still think they'll be worried about his innings pitched, but I don't think that they will be as worried. I think they're going to give him a little bit longer of a leash. Like, he threw 157 last year. I think he might get to 170 this year. Doesn't seem like a huge difference, but maybe it's three more outs and half of his starts. So he's able to get more opportunity for a win. I think I'm expecting big things from Luis Garcia this year. I think the new windup's actually going to be a good thing for him.
I do
less
too.
Moving parts, simpler delivery, which I think is going to lead to more command, more consistency. I think Luis Garcia is going to have a breakout season. I'm going to give him 17 wins.
Ooh, wow, you went big.
He had 15 last year.
All right, Joe.
He had 15 last year. I'm giving him 17 wins.
Yeah, there's no meat in the middle today. It's just meeting with Jeremy. So I had 17 written down as well. I think it's – I mean, well, obviously could be wrong that the windup doesn't help him,
yeah,
and it does hurt him this year.
I mean,
year,
he also pitched out of the stretch a lot. It's not like he's
– Joel's mad at me.
Look,
Joel,
do you want me to
show you that I had it written down?
No,
first?
Don't.
Show us. We don't want spoilers for the other
ones. You could have written it down somewhere else or quickly. No, don't give me that.
That means our consensus win total for Luis Garcia this year is 16 wins.
All right, 16 wins for Luis Garcia. Okay, what do you think his ERA is going to be, Blakers? 3.72 a year ago.
Hey, Joel, I just wrote mine down. Just so
I think – you know what? I think he's going to be in the same ballpark – In terms of, I do believe that the change in windup is going to help him. I do believe that he's actually going to be more effective. But I think it's going to be right around the same thing. I think I'm going to say 3.75.
Okay. That would be a career high for Garcia. Now, he hasn't been in the bigs that long. He's only had two full seasons.
Teams have seen him more.
True. 21, he had a 3.48. Last year, he had a 3.72. I believe that, again, I think Garcia is going to take that step forward where he becomes, you know, slightly one tier up from what he has been so far, and he's been good. So if I'm going to go 17 wins for Garcia, I think he takes a step forward. I'm going to give Luis Garcia a 3.41 ERA.
See, the reason why I said what I said too, though, is because as good as I think the change in the windup is going to help him overall, I think where it's going to hurt him is, like, the pitch clock and everything that goes with it, because he had some meltdowns mentally. He was going when he goes through any kind of issue, it seems like he needed a little time and a lot more around the mound, and he's not going to have that.
Yeah.
So that's why I think it might go up a little bit.
340. What did I say? 41? 341.
Yeah, 340.
Yeah, he's still not looking at me. No. I got 360. So kind of meeting in the middle here. I think he still has a better year than last year. I'm struggling with the ERAs because I don't know how much the shift is going to affect people.
Yeah.
Like, honestly, I think I got to pull up our Fromber one that we did for our consensus Fromber stance. I think I dropped mine.
Dropped his ERA?
I think I would have dropped it even more.
Like, good or bad?
Bad.
So, okay.
Raised it?
Yeah, because dropping an ERA is a good thing.
Yeah, it's a good thing.
You confuse me. Like, you're talking on both sides.
Yeah, but like, no,
yourself.
But like, dropping things typically is worse.
Yeah, lesser production.
Yeah less production. Saying. Like, he gave up like six singles in his last outing.
Yeah.
Was that last night? Like, I went 360. So our consensus for Luis Garcia then for 2023 is 16 wins with a 3.58 ERA.
I'll take that.
I will in a heartbeat.
We didn't do Cy Young this time like we did with the other two guys. Does anyone have a Cy Young vote?
Okay. No, let's not. I don't think Luis Garcia is in the Cy Young conversation, at least yet. Maybe in a couple of years. Urquidy definitely not as well.
He could have one of those breakout seasons.
Yeah, he could. All right, let's do Jose Urquidy. Jose Urquidy, who we've seen around a little bit longer than Luis Garcia, he still has not really had a full body of work. Last year was his closest, where he made 28 starts, appeared in 29 games, was 13-8 with a 3.94 ERA. Let's start with the win total with Jose Urquidy. How many wins does Urquidy get in 2023?
13.
You think he matches what he had last year?
Yep.
See, Urquidy pitches deep into games. I think all of these pitchers are going to benefit because they have a better offense. Like, the shift isn't going to affect their win total as much as it's going to affect their ERA.
I could be like you. The what?
What's that?
I could be like you. The what?
What do you mean?
What you said. The way you said it kind of quick.
What did I say?
Shift.
Shift.
Oh. I went right over my head. Definitely shift. I think Urquidy wins a career-high 14 games.
Oh.
Career-high 14 games for Jose Urquidy.
See, the one thing that really scares me is, because you're right, I factor in the offense with all these guys, but the one thing that really scares me is when he blows up, he has just an abomination when he blows up.
Yeah, but that wouldn't affect his win total.
I know, it'll affect his ERA, but I was just going to affect the game he's in, and sometimes he gets into a rut because of it.
Remember Ocho last year was like, he just throws BP. Yeah. Remember that start he had last year was abysmal?
Oh, that's what I'm saying.
We've been too positive, I think, for a lot of these, so I'm gonna bring down the room a little bit. I kind of am the Urquidy weak link guy for me. I would have liked him being traded last year, personally, so I'm going to go 10 wins.
Good thing they didn't trade him last year.
I know. 10 wins. So consensus for Jose Urquidy is 12 wins still.
Hunter Brown's the weak link, by the
way. I was going to say, we haven't got to Hunter Brown yet. When we do that one, that'll be interesting.
At this point, I don't know if he's going to be the fifth starter, so I don't know if we're going to do
this. Who's beating out Hunter Brown?
No one's beating him out for 5.
Brandon Belak?
Yeah, if he walks 100 guys every game.
He'll be fine. He'll be fine enough to be a starter. All right, what do you have for Urquidy's ERA?
What was his ERA last year?
3.94.
Yeah. I'm going to say he's over 4.
Oof.
Yeah, I'm going to say because those blow-ups worry me. I'm going to say he's 4.10.
All right, 4.10 ERA for Urquidy for Blankers. I'm going to say he's going to pitch right near his career ERA, which is 3.74. I'll go 3.25. 3.75 ERA for
three
the Mexican
quarters.
Pitcher Jose Urquidy. Yeah,
3.75.
Yeah, my bad. 3.75.
Hey, Joel.
Joe's up.
4.10.
Man, y'all hate Urquidy.
Look at me now.
No, I don't think we
y'all,
hate
y'all
him.
Hate
I
Mexican
think it's
pitchers.
Just,
easy.
Seriously. I think it's just being realistic about the fact that those blow-up innings are scary to me, and that's going to blow up your ERA with it if they're earned. So, and he just keeps doing what he's doing, whether it's working or not. So I think that scares me.
I love Urquidy. He's one of my favorite pitchers.
So 12 wins, 3.98 ERA.
Hold on. What? How many wins?
12 wins. 3.98 ERA.
That's a bad year for Urquidy. That's a bad year.
For a four starter in this league, it ain't that bad.
That's below his career averages.
Yeah, but I mean, in the realm of realism,
with the
entire pitching staff, as your four starter gives you that, you'll take that.
Yeah, I guess it depends on how you're looking at it. Relative to the rest of the league, four starters, that is good. Relative to like what you expect
out of Urquidy, right.
Yeah, I think it's on the low end. All right, Weird Take Wednesday. Joe George's baby. What weird takes do we have prescribed today? It's Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.